Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Bobcast. With you as always is Bob, live in the lounge, staring at the Ouija board. Tonight's guests, ladies and gentlemen, rains down upon us for a very special occasion. I guess I was only 19 years old when I first saw today's topic on the big screen. Actually, it wasn't the big screen. It was the Ritz East down there in the Rittenhouse section, I believe, of Philadelphia. And it hit me in a way that I never had seen before. I knew I had heard of cinema de verite or, you know, found footage, you know. But I'd never seen anything quite like this. And when I saw it, the internet still wasn't so good. The internet kind of like did a thing where it would take 45 to 50 minutes to even get on the screen.
If you had a phone line.
If you had a phone line. That's today's guest. I haven't introduced him yet, but it's okay. It's okay. There's nobody on my Rolodex of podcast guests that I could talk to about today's topic, because not only did today's guest teach me the art of screenplay writing, and then he moves on to take over the town of Conshohocken and becomes their mayor, seemingly out of nowhere. He called me up one day and said, yeah, Bob, switching gears. How do you feel about supporting the new mayor of Conshohocken? I was like, sure, let's do this. We did a bunch of outdoor festivals. We did a bunch of gigs. He still continues to be my favorite mayor on the entire planet. But most importantly, he's one of my favorite people to talk about horror, pop culture, screenplay writing, and the art of suspense. As today, we welcome back to the show, Mr. Yaniv Aronson, as we discuss the 25th anniversary of the Blair Witch Project. How are you, sir?
I can't believe it's been 25 years since I went to Oaks with my friends.
Oh, wow.
To watch that film.
How many friends were you with?
Walk
me through the whole thing when they pick you up. Tell me what's going on.
God, I'm trying to remember. So I think it was my friend Joe who ended up being my best man. I think we all met at his house in Bluebell right off 73. And we all piled in and we drove. It was interesting because that is like a bit of a drive and it's not as urban.
Yeah, that's a bit.
If we had gone, I don't think I've ever been, but I
have contemplated going to that place because of said thing you just said. It would only be the place.
What was around back then? I don't think Plymouth Meeting was there yet.
No.
It was just the one on.
It was the Regal. Ridge. And the Regal had just opened in 96, I believe.
Okay.
I remember seeing Titanic there.
Yeah. So we went to, maybe it was sold out because we went up there. And it's a little more rural, right? Because you're driving out to Collegeville, out to Oaks.
Oh,
and
so it like set the mood.
Yeah, it really. Well, wow. And we were that scared driving out. We were excited. I was in TV lab with my friend. That's where we met. And I think we were excited. And then the way home was a whole different story.
Yeah, you had a good ride.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. So during this time period of your life, you know, like I said before, it's hard for people who are young to understand what's going on here with the internet, but it's slow, dude. And there was a website for the Blair Witch Project. We did say the title, yes. And the website really played it up to being real. You know what I mean? But there was no chat room. There was no social media.
Yeah,
it was all like this. Me and you talking. You know,
it was word of mouth.
What did you guys believe
So I'm a film person, right? Mm-hmm. And my friends were film people, so I think we knew. Like, I was like, okay, there's a trailer, put it out. Like, it's not going to be, like, a police footage. So we knew, but it doesn't make the marketing less...
effective.
Impactful and, like, scary. And then the film, as we'll get into, does so much right that we were just terrified. Like, we knew it was a film, but we were absolutely terrified leaving that theater.
So, like, I think the website was ainitcoolnews.com. It's called ainitcool.com right now. And there was this guy named Harry Knowles, I think it was his name. And basically, he owned, like, Hollywood at this time period, too. And I think they actually, they paid a homage to him in Entourage, and I think it's Rainn Wilson playing a version of him when Aquaman comes out.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
But this guy had this website, and it was like the talk of the town, because this guy was just from Texas, nowhere near Hollywood, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But he could write, because it was like, you knew that he loved film. You knew that he loved genre, you know?
Yep.
And he was the one that started touting about this. And I was like, what? But like the way he did it was, maybe it's real, we don't know. Because, you know, it's not a major, you know, release like back in the day, like a Mission Impossible film.
Right.
This was released by Artisan Entertainment, I believe, right?
That sounds right.
Lionsgate owns it now, so who knows what the first one is. But
yes.
Yeah, they released it. I mean, so many things. But for me, I mean, like, I went to the Ritz downtown with my friend Brian and I believe his girlfriend Cassie. That's the weird part, is like, I usually know who I went with, but I was so into that thing that like, I didn't, I remember not even speaking much afterwards, because I was just like still like playing it back in my head.
That was us too,
but it was like sad, because I had seen it, okay, and I recalled this just last night when I was doing like some pre-thoughts on this. The film itself gets released in the summertime. Paranormal Activity is a summer release, wide release, but I had seen it in like February, because I knew it was cold when I went, you know, and that when I looked up the release date, I was like, oh, that's right, I had seen like an advanced showing of it, you know, where they would do that, and then a film would come out like a year later.
Part
remember
their marketing? They wanted the commercials were reactions of the audience.
Oh, they were so good.
That was good.
And the terror. Really, but I mean, like, as the Blair Witch goes, I mean, like, one, it's such a phenomenal like film, and like you taught me screenplay writing for people who haven't listened to the trilogy of podcasts we've done in the past. One of the things about this film is that it doesn't have a screenplay per se. It has notes, but we can get into that. But the idea of the Blair Witch Project, did you listen to that podcast I sent you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So like, they had been working on this idea for a while, which is wild, you know? Like,
so this is the cutting edge part of it, because we're talking about a structure, kind of like Curb,
mm-hmm.
where we know where the scene needs to go, but how we get there is kind of up to what happens on set,
mm-hmm.
Which hadn't been done before, really. And then we're talking about found footage. That wasn't a thing.
Ever. I think there's some stuff in the 70s, but it was just a scene. It wasn't like a, you know?
Yes.
But it never been done.
Not like this.
Let's talk about the gear they used to do this found footage thing, because I also feel that for those who've seen the film, I believe the cameras are also characters. And I believe that that is also a character. They have a traditional 16mm black and white camera, because that's what you had to shoot on considered to be in a festival back in the day.
We hadn't quite shifted to digital as like a respectable medium until like the mid-2000s, somewhere around there.
So the thing that's cool about this camera is, and like, if you're not into cinematography, if you're not into tech gear, you would never know this, but I do believe it's one of the things that scares you the most, is that the black and white video is simply picking up video and video only.
Yep.
The other device, which is Mike's sound DAT recorder, is picking up the sound. So there's a couple of scenes where, like, you know, the black and white camera's way far away.
Yes.
But the audio mic is picking up the terror.
Yeah, it's really
and
cool.
Like, it happens so many times in the film, but you don't even notice it.
Yeah.
But it definitely does something to the terror factor. And to be honest with you, I don't know if anybody has done it as well as they do in that film since. Hey, how are you?
Hey,
how are you? We're doing a podcast on the Blair Witch Project. You ever see the Blair Witch Project? Oh, that's your homework. You got to go 25th tonight. 25th anniversary. Yes. Thank you very much. I'm 44, ma'am. Thank you very much. Yep. It's the bovine growth hormone that they were putting in our drinks back in the day.
Why did I get it?
You look great, ma'am. Have a good day. I try to be friendly out here, you know, because it's like everybody, one of the things that I try to do, and it's sometimes hard, is to say hello to everybody, because you can out here. There's a comedian, I think, the other night said a joke like, yeah, in places like this, you can say hello, but if you're in New York and you try to say hello to everybody, they think you're nuts.
Yeah, you'd be crazy. And I will say, I don't think a single person has not said hi back.
Yeah.
Since we started the hike.
Yeah, it's hard. But yeah, dude, like, the gear, the camera, the low budget, you know?
Yep.
What's the budget? Do you remember it?
$40,000.
Insane.
Yeah.
Goes on to make million.
$149 million.
$149 million.
And that's just box office.
Which is just nuts. Yep. The thing that, like, I wanted to bring up at the front of this, just so that way the algorithms pick it up. yes, we're doing this Blair Witch Project for the 25th anniversary, but we're also doing this in support of the actors. The actor, Josh, the guy with the ponytail, I saw on his Instagram, I guess, what was it, like 2-3 weeks ago, yeah, that Lionsgate was picking up the film. They had acquired the rights to it, and then KIO'd them.
Yeah.
Acquired the rights to it, and then, you know, left them out of it,
yeah,
you know? But
yeah,
the thing is they'd never been paid, and I never knew how bad it was.
I didn't either.
Tell everybody how bad it is.
So they got, what, like a couple thousand fee? And again, that's not... it's not weird because 99.999% of these films don't make it, right?
Yeah.
So you get
this
fee.
This is like a Craigslist ad.
It dies off, mm-hmm, right? Probably like plenty of my films. And Actors Made for Me would just work off food, right? Mm-hmm. So this one happened to be multiply by XXX successful, and they didn't get a piece of it. And I do remember them on all the talk shows, like after the release.
Yeah.
And have they been in anything? I can't remember.
No, they had been acting in like stage plays and stuff like that, but that was their first big time role. And then just to add to your note, it should be noted that the actors, to achieve an element of realness, used their own names.
They did, yeah.
So that's also a weird clause in the Screen Actors Guild, where producers claimed that since they used their own names, they were appearing as themselves and not a character or something like that. Which is so shady, because it's like, so I, you know, what should I say? I'm dedicating this. I'm also joining the cause for the three leads in the film, you know, like, because their work, there is no Blair Witch, you know what I mean? Like, and also they should bring them back. And at the end of this podcast, I'm going to pitch you my idea for the sequel.
I mean, it would be fan service, just like Marvel's doing, right? It would be something we all want to see. Mm-hmm. It would tie in so nicely to the lore. Like, it just seems like a win-win for everyone if they're in the film.
So apparently the creators of the Blair Witch Project, once it became a phenomenal, successful hit, were approached to write number two.
Okay.
And the studio didn't like their version. Went with Book of Shadows.
They went with Book of Shadows?
Yes.
That's the version.
Yeah, and then they also had came back and put out another prequel idea where you went back to, you know, the witch's origins and stuff. But even the creator himself says that they already made it. It's that film called The Witch by Eggers, I think. Or
oh, that's interesting.
So that was the style they were trying to go. Wow. But I'm glad they didn't, because it's like, that's the one thing that's good about The Blair Witch is like, you don't know, you know? And like, I love the way the film starts. We should get into that. So like, the film starts in such a great way where, you know, you're meeting them all. Like, you have the idea that Mike and Josh have been friends. Josh and Heather have been, I remember in the beginning thinking like, did they, had they been together?
You definitely get some threads for that.
Are they just flirting? You know, is there some other type thing going on there? And I love the sequence where, you know, they all roll up and they're unloading their gear and then they're in the hotel room and they're talking about what they're going to go do.
Yep. And you're getting, so what's really interesting about the characters, which you don't always get in a horror movie because there's no time, you get a feel for their personalities. So you get that Heather is the driving force, which is really, I mean, think about progressive, right? You don't see a female, especially as a filmmaker, get to be that kind of character where she's driving the action forward. She's the one that's saying we have to go my way when they start to get lost. She's the one that's really driving the narrative. That would almost be strange in like 2024, 25 years later, even though we've come so far, right? So for her to be,
to add to that, you know what the thing is I think that it's Heather, it's that actor.
Yep.
Or actress, I like calling them all actresses. It makes more sense. But she got an edge, dude.
She does.
Like, she got a look that's an edge.
Yes.
She also has, like, you know, power over these men. And
she does.
It's almost established immediately, as you and I know as screenplay writers, a rather impossible thing to really convey so quickly.
Yeah, and it's a credit to her as an actress too. It's not just in the story design. It's her being able to carry that forward. But I do remember, like, an annoyance, like they were going too hard, and she is. And I don't know if it was, I don't know if it was just me personally being like, I don't know. It just feels like she's pushing too hard, and maybe it's contrived. Or if I was just genuinely like concerned, like, oh no, she's driving them down a bad path.
She, yeah. she had that element of unstableness, I think is what you're trying to say. Yeah. Like, is she okay up there? Especially when she starts talking in her documentary voice, you know, because it's like, okay, she's dedicated, but we now know her as two different type people right off the bat. I also, as we were discussing it, isn't it weird that the Book of Shadows, like, she's not in it, but, like, the female lead essentially copies her look of edginess, right?
Yes.
What? You know, like...
Yes. Well, everything, we're probably off on a tangent, but everything the first film does right, the second film completely does wrong.
I refuse to watch it. I know it's, like, up there on the thing, but I was like, nah, dude, I'm good. I don't want to go back.
Let's just show the witch all the time.
Yeah.
That's the sequel.
Just... walking through the woods during the day, picking up sticks. That would be the sequel that I would, you know?
Yep.
But even Mike, like Mike's character too, a couple of things I like about Mike. One, Mike likes to wear lots of layers. He's got several different flannels on, which was smart.
Yep.
Mike, I think, is the eldest of the group, I think. I think Mike's 25, still lives at home with his mom.
He definitely looks the oldest, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he loves smoking, right?
Yep.
And
which in the 90s was a thing.
Which was, everybody smoked. I smoked. I mean, sometimes, like, I look back and I'm like, man, like, what was I thinking?
But, does look badass on camera.
Oh, my God. It's one of the most amazing. So cool. It's also, too, one of the most triggering things as a former cigarette smoker.
Yeah.
Last time I had one was, like, five and almost a half years ago.
Yeah. Hey,
and every time I see someone, hey, how you doing? Anytime I see you want to film, especially like any Quentin Tarantino film.
I was just going to say, Tarantino
because
he does that
mic thing with the audio burn of the ash.
Yep. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
yeah.
You could feel it. But yeah, they all smoked. Mike lives at home, and Mike is an audiologist.
Yep.
You know, he's got the ability to capture really good audio, and that's what I was saying before.
Which becomes
it's
really
so
important.
Crucial,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
To the plot and to everything. Now, the interesting thing about this whole thing, as you had mentioned, it was very Kirby, you know, with the cue cards and stuff like that. And, you know, the amount of improv I was unaware of until that pod. And it feels like they really generally are friends.
Yeah.
We found out in real life later, though, that Josh and Heather really despised each other, you know.
Yep.
But we'll get to that later. You know, getting to know them and the whole thing in the hotel room. And then we get right into the case.
That's my favorite part of horror movies, by the way.
Getting to know
I love when we get to see the characters interacting, and you get to be a part of that world. You get to be like a part of their friend group for a little bit. And then you know everything's going to die, right? Everything's going to fall off a cliff. But I love that setup to a traditional horror movie where we get to know the characters.
And to care about them,
yeah.
You know, and then to set them down a trap. Yeah,
Some of the really low-budget early 80s movies... Mm-hmm. Like, really don't start killing people till much later.
Oh, no.
You can get through 50% of the movie with the friend group almost fully intact. And it's really cool to see because
it's true.
Just, you kind of blow by it nowadays.
Yeah, those 70s movies were just, it was all hard.
Yeah.
Like, slasher.
Oh, yeah.
Like, right off the bat, gruesome. Oh,
yeah. Texas Chainsaw, everyone's just dying.
This is the type of horror I prefer, though, is the one that's not seen. And, like, that's why I like, you know, the ending of Seven, obviously, you don't know. Yeah. What, you know, you know, but you don't, you know what I mean? Like,
what's in the box, man?
But when you withhold in screenplay writing, you know, it creates this tension. And the tension, like, as a screenplay writer, the tighter you pull that knot, you know what I mean? Like,
it's very, very hard to write because you have to trust your audience.
Yeah.
And it's hard to do that. You think they're going to get lost, and they may. But if you can trust that they'll put the pieces together.
I know, it's the hard part.
Your screenplay.
Without being like, hey, it's on the nose.
That's the problem.
That's what they call it, on the nose, folks who are not screenplay writers. Literally, I mean, it's when you're like putting exposition or you're telling, you know, like the audience straight up what's about to happen or why it's going to happen, you know.
I just had a conversation with a student last week about this, and I could see the terror in his eyes. Because he was so worried that the audience wouldn't understand his story. And I said, just trust them. You have to. Otherwise, you're just going to be put, like you said, everything's going to be on the nose. It's not fun to write.
No, it's not fun to write. And like, that's the thing about Blair Witch too, is it's like, it's not really on the nose because you're not really sure what's going to happen. But the interesting thing too, is this part that we move out of the hotel room. It's the first day of shooting.
Yes.
Before we go into the woods.
Critical. This is critical.
Critical.
Yes.
And there's a bunch of things that happen here that are, you know, without a doubt, MacGuffins are like treasure boxes that have been placed
yeah.
for people to figure out. But the thing I wanted to say for the audience and who are not aware is that originally the film played out much more like a documentary, with these characters not just appearing here in the first act, but sprinkled throughout the film. And then the, you know, directors were like, yeah, we shouldn't do that. And I love that they took these chances, because that version wouldn't have done the same thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, as a writer, I think it was Max Landis said to me, I took like one of his writing workshops, and then I did a Zoom meeting with him, you know, after he got canceled. He was looking for friends. But he said, yeah, as a writer, you need to be prepared to eat your ashes.
And it was also fortunate, because if they had kept the man on the street interviews, you lose the ability to say it's footage found by the police. Because the second half is just potentially raw footage, right? Being sliced together.
Wow.
So they would have lost that.
That's good, dude.
Yeah.
There's so many sequences during that. There's one where a woman describes, you know, what the witch looks like, with like a feral creature look. She herself is terrifying, the way they shot her in the black and white 16 mil.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
most crucial part, though, is it was actually this scene, which sets up the ending. And there's no spoilers here, because you guys have been watching forever. Basically, they went back and they did that bit about what's the guy's name? So, like, there's the witch, but then there's this other guy that got possessed.
Oh.
Rich.
Gosh. Yeah, you're right.
So I forget his name.
Yeah.
But, like, see, that's the thing, too, is about the Blair Witch, is they got so many different things that they can...
Yeah, a lot of layers.
So there's a guy who starts to get possessed. Hey, how you doing?
Hello.
He gets, like, you know...
that's right.
Possessed by the witch, and then he starts to go out, and he brings the kids there.
Yes.
And then I can't... it's either the one kid goes into the corner and faces the wall because he doesn't want
to... And that's why we hark back to the face in the corner. That's right. Yeah, you're
which
right.
Which they say is very hard, because... what's that called again, Teach? When you're... plot device. So it's a plot device where, like, you're like, okay, this is gonna pay off later. It always happens in films too. It actually happened,
like breadcrumbs, like leaving a little
trail. Well, I mean, like, did you watch the new True Detective?
No, not yet.
Okay, I won't spoil it for
you.
Yeah, my fans that listen to the True Bobcast,
I have not been able to listen to those episodes.
That.
Yeah,
oh, they're killer, man. Yeah. They were some of the best work we've ever done. But you know what I'm saying? Like, within the first 4 minutes, there's always going to be something that's going to lead you right to the last scene of the film.
Yep.
At least some of the good ones, you know. But what did you think of, like, all that exposition that was so critical, and like those scenes?
So the important thing about that sequence, which is just the man on the street interviews, mm-hmm. is some were real man on the street interviews and some were actors.
So we don't
necessarily know who's in on it, who's not. We're kind of just taking it for what it's worth. Now, we know as filmmakers, we could go right now and start interviewing people in the woods here, and some people would be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And some would totally play along mm-hmm. and would totally buy into the story and make it terrifying.
Oh, to be on film.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And especially nowadays, like, this is pre, you know, TikTok, social media, like, everyone's a ham now. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting that, you know that famous scene in American Psycho when Willem Dafoe is talking to Christian Bale? And they shot it all these different ways to leave everyone off balance. And this is exactly what it does. It leaves us off balance.
I love that scene. I've spoken about that here on the show. I think we brought it up during True Bobcast, too. It was, they wanted you to, I watch that scene sometimes just on YouTube, just for fun, you know?
Yeah.
Not the movie, but, like, it's so cool how they do it. You don't know.
Yep.
Is he in? Is he not in on it? Like,
yep.
First off, I didn't know that some of those people were real.
Yeah, it was a mix.
Is that in the Script Apart podcast I sent you?
I don't know if you mentioned that or
That's
not.
That's awesome. You've been studying it like me for years, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, the best part, too, is, like, the interviews of the people of the local towns community, then adventures off into the stream. And when you get into the stream, you meet some local fishermen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of lore that they're able to get into this film before, like, the inciting incident, it's pretty cool how they did it, you know, because it's like the tension builds and builds and builds, you know, and then they were smart to do that thing where you remember in the beginning where you heard her like host voice.
Yes.
But then she brought it back after she interviewed the fishermen when they got to the Black Rock.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was almost like there's like a part of me was like, oh, they're going to get it. You know what I mean? Like, it was like you wanted them to get scared then because you knew it was coming.
So we were talking on our hike up to the booth here.
Mm-hmm.
About setting an atmosphere and letting your imagination take over.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how it's done. So you, and this is goes back to caveman days, right? We're just telling stories to each other. There's no monster that's going to pop out, right? But your imagination takes over. Boy Scouts around the campfire, right? Like someone makes up a story and that's what you think about and you think is going to get you all night, right? And this is what the movie does so well. It sets up the lore in a lot of different, interesting, unique ways. And then we get to the woods and we're already like totally on edge to see what happens.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, first, there's so many different parts to the lore that we're like, you know, and like you also don't know in hindsight, like who is out there in the woods, you know? We can get to that later. But I mean, like, as like, you know, you start to care about these people, you know, you start to care. They spend the first night, and when they spend the first night, nothing really happens. In fact, Josh kind of wakes up and he's the only one that heard something, and he's rubbing his eyes saying, yeah, it sounds like people far away or whatever, you know, like, but then they start off on their quest the next day. And I love this part of the movie.
Yeah.
I love it so much because it's the beginning of the end, but it's also like, you don't know what's going to happen. That's the thing I remember is like, the trailers just showed people running around screaming.
That's it.
But you kept thinking, because where we were during that time period as cinema goers, that eventually this creature would show up.
That's it. That's what we're waiting for. Waiting for the big reveal. Waiting for the scare. And what we get are all these little red herrings, right? The stick people, just like creepy things that are happening. The idea that maybe the woods are changing in some way and that they can't find where they're going. And again, it just builds the snowball, right? This tension snowball that makes us more revved up to see the witch, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, eventually we get to the character starting to, you know, get picked off or disappear or whatever it is. But yeah, you're right with that Josh moment. That and this is one of the reasons why, as we were kind of talking leading up to this, we both kind of have this idea about
drop
Josh.
It on them right now, because we're not in spoiler territory. We could be non-linear and talk about
it. I remember leaving the theater and being like, well, I mean, Josh is the killer.
Mm-hmm.
And my friends were like, no, it's the witch. No, come on, it's the witch. And I was, and they're like, well, no, the what is he gonna cut off his finger? I'm like, yeah, if he's crazy, yeah, he would have cut off his finger.
The wild thing is it a finger? Because I've heard it's a tongue. I heard
For some reason, tongue's in my head too.
To me, it looks like red mucus.
Yeah.
Or like, what's that thing from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Krang or whatever.
Krang, the Krang. Brain.
Yeah, it looks like fucking
guy.
Krang with blood all over it.
Yeah, we
but
get
I
a
do
quick
love your
quote. We get
this
a quick
idea. Because I did watch it once as, so I highly recommend for the Bobcast listeners, watch it as Josh is the murderer. And like you can see.
It fits. And that early morning scene fits into it. Because instead of him being the warning, he is in on it, and he's revving them up to go down the wrong path.
Right, and then like somebody said, like after you and I discussed, like I think we were both researching at the same time. Hey, how are you?
Hello.
Like somebody was like, "Well, how do you explain the tent when the kids come and poke it and fishing wire maybe?"
Or you had other people in on it and they come by and wiggle the tent.
Much easier.
I mean,
very
know.
Good. Dude.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like people out there messing with us. But yeah, I mean, like that version is great. And then like you have to also like then I start to think go into Scream territory, because if you recall, like there was two killers, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
So is Mike in on it?
So I had not heard that specifically until you mentioned it to me. I'd have to rewatch it with Mike in my head.
Okay. Because here's how I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
And for the Bobcast listeners, is that Mike was in on it, because he really is the star of the show in the end there. But Mike's smoking the whole time, right? As a smoker, you know where your cigarette pack is the whole time, dude. I swear to you, you know. And like, for those of you who have never smoked, you don't get it. But like, especially when you're young, you always got your smokes in the same spot, dude. And he just magically finds another pack.
Yeah, that's
Where'd
true.
You get the pack at?
That's you know true, I mean? Yeah.
When he's pacing back and forth, he's like, we're still smoking.
It would kind of make a little more sense for that ending shot, because you're kind of thinking, all right, if Josh is the killer, what did he just stand him on the wall?
Yeah.
Like, it would make more sense if he's in on it. He's there
hey,
as a means to trap Heather.
Do you ever see the Blair Witch Project by chance? We're celebrating the 25th anniversary, recording a podcast.
In the woods,
in honor of it. But you've seen it? You've both seen it. So, like...
Yeah,
you mind if I ask your names for the show?
Sure, Mike.
Mike, what's your name? Okay. Thoughts on the Blair Witch Project real quick. This is, by the way, the mayor of Country Hocken. Yeah, my name's Bob.
Hands. You're in good hands.
You're all good here.
I wasn't really a big fan, honestly. Mm-hmm. Camera was very shaky. I didn't really find it very scary.
That's
either.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, but I guess the camera stuff, I don't know.
Like Cloverfield. After, just like...
Well, it was like Cloverfield, but that was a whole vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was intentional. That made it spooky for me, but more the history behind it is more interesting for me. So that was
lore. That's what we're going over right now. Yeah. I thank you though for bringing that up because I don't have that thing where you get sick. You know what I mean? What's it?
I did warnings get nauseous on stuff now. When I saw it in the theater.
Really?
For sure. I definitely walked out of there like.
Ugh. Wow. That's something we should probably cover. So I appreciate you. Yeah. The name of the show, it's called The Bobcast. You can search it anywhere. It's got my face with like a...
And we're on episode number...
428, wow. I think, maybe? 428? I'm on Spotify, yeah. That's it's huge. My face. Like,
is this live or is this...
Yeah. I record it. It'll come out tomorrow morning. I used to do them live, but, you know, sometimes it's just good to be in the moment. You know?
You got married, you had a kid.
Yeah, I got a kid. You know, I got tired.
Yeah.
And all.
Yeah.
But, make sure you check it out. There's lots of other cool stuff on there as well, but... Thank you for stopping and talking to us.
Thank you.
Appreciate
guys,
you.
Yeah,
the shaky thing.
I forgot about that.
So, like, you know how they put, like, what's up with these bugs, dude?
I offered you the lemon eucalyptus.
I can't do it to my skin.
Turn it down.
It's
all natural. All natural.
Is it?
Lemon eucalyptus, yeah.
I'm all right until now. Right. They went away as soon as we started talking about it. But, yeah, I didn't feel any nausea from it. But, yeah, the shaking and, like, running at night with that, you know, but.
Yeah, and part of that is the nature of we're running in the woods, mm-hmm. right?
And you don't know where what's in front of you.
Yes.
Which is a major fear of mine.
We're also, it was one of the first times we've done this, mm-hmm. and shaky cam wasn't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the first time we had seen it, and then.
Yeah, you're right, dude. That's weird to think, right?
And then nowadays, like, the cameras are just better. Like, it's hard to get shaky cam like that nowadays. So I think it was a very unique moment in time. And, like, I didn't get nauseous in Cloverfield, but I definitely remember being nauseous during this film.
I love Cloverfield. Cloverfield's a great movie. But, the whole idea behind it, if Josh and Mike were in on it, maybe. But then also my favorite ways to watch is that, they all are straight-up victims.
Well, that's the fun.
That's the fun way to watch it, you know, because... I mean, the part that I found out, there's this podcast that I really like if you're a screenplay writer called Script Apart, and they talked about how some of the parts in the film were actually real, you know? One of the real things is they really lost the map.
Yep.
Like, in real life, Mike lost the map. Like, it wasn't scripted, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, that thing with the Curb Your Enthusiasm index cards, I mean, first off, I would love to be in an environment like that where you have some clear things,
cool.
but you can just improv.
Yeah.
And like, you got tons of tape. Go ahead.
Just let your talent work, man. It's so nice.
But yeah, I just can't imagine, you know?
But that's, and of course the filmmakers are there ratcheting up the tension. The filmmakers are the ones that shook the tent.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing things to provoke their actors.
Yeah. Setting up speakers in the woods in various different places to throw them off.
Which of course throws us off as audience members.
Which also would happen at random spots at night. So they're also were really tired.
Yeah.
They weren't sleeping correctly. So that's real.
Yeah.
Interesting thing too, is that, Heather and, Josh didn't get along in real life. They butt heads as actors.
Yep.
So originally it was, in the script it was Mike that was going to go missing. Not Josh.
Interesting.
But they switched things up because they wanted to see what would happen. Should we walk and talk for the rest?
Yeah.
Let's do it. I feel like these creatures are on me here.
Yeah.
The Blair Witch.
I think we've turned the corner here.
Yeah.
In seasons.
That we have. But that, so like that one, the next day after there's nothing and Josh just says anything, we get into the woods and we're starting to feel like something's off without a doubt, you know?
And by the way, like, Josh was an ass.
Yeah.
Like, he really was an ass as a character. For as much as Heather had that personality of trying to drive the story forward in a very aggressive way, like, I think the audience really does hate Josh by the time he goes missing as well.
Yeah. He's mad. He's like, I got to get the camera back. I got to be at fucking work, man. I've got to be at work at 9, man.
Yep. But the fact that we're even saying that means he's been characterized enough for us to care.
He's caring a lot about himself, though, in the moment. And also, too, like, Heather, you know, has, you know, she's starting to fall apart when she starts to... She seems to be the most realist, even though she's making the documentary on the Blair, where she seems to be the one who you know, suffers the most with the most psychological shit because their world just completely turned upside down.
Yeah.
How could this be true?
Well, and then she mm-hmm. has the famous monologue and she blames herself and she's apologizing, yeah. right? So she really does take the blame for everything that happens at that point.
But I think, you know, that right before, like of all the terror, like first off, the first time they hear something out there, the noises that you hear, I remember one being in the cinema and be like, I never heard anything like that. What's yeah. that, dude? Like rocks being yeah. thrown or yeah. like someone like breaking like tree limbs in half. You know what I mean? Like it had to be so wild, you know?
So it's not, hey, how are you? Hi.
Which is crazy, you know?
Yeah. So it's not, again, letting our imaginations take over. It's mm-hmm. not monster sounds. It's not.
It's something we've never heard.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Which is wild, right? I mean, and then they're trying to rationalize it. They're like, what is that, man?
If it was a monster sound, you could say it's a monster. But we never get that.
Yeah, we, you know, it's one thing we definitely picked up on here is that it's so wild that we almost need it to see the monster. And the fact that they didn't show it, because that's where we were as cinema goers then. That was like post like Men in Black, you know what I mean? Like we need the big payoff with the CGI or something, you know, like.
And that isn't that like the scary part for us leaving the theater? Like the camera just cuts to black.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, it just of all the things that I've ever seen, that and The Sopranos, very similar with the whole thing. Yeah. But it's alarming, but it's also a clear indicator that the story has come to a close. But the thing, the tension between once Josh goes missing, right? So first off, they wake up one day and there's a couple things, key choices they make as filmmakers. There, one. Oh man, why is it? What is this goo shit, man? It's fucking slime, man. It's fucking slime.
Yep.
And he's like, "Why is it all over my shit? My shit." You know. Yeah, here he goes with my shit again. You know, everything's about my shit. I got to get to work. I got.
Yep.
So like, you know, is he a narcissist? Does the wish not like narcissism? Who knows? But
and by the way, I was actually a little stressed out on the real world side, like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, what's he going to do? He's got to go to work.
Like, yeah, I think I was more concerned about the camera because I've had fear or anxiety like that where like I'm borrowing something and I can't get it back in time. Yeah. Like, and I don't want them to think I'm going to steal it, you know?
Yeah, we're goody two-shoes, yeah.
And then the idea, too, of like, I mean, I wonder if in the index cards it was out there that, hey, we're going to start to mess with physical location, the compass, which is definitely a, you know, device, like, that stops working, you know, and you're like, what? You know, like, where they're trying to get out because after that night of terror the first time, especially that, you remember when the, okay, so like they hear them out there, right? And then they get the tent starts to shake, right?
Yep.
And then they make the decision to get the fuck out of the tent. And when they do, that's also too when the dat is on,
yes.
And she's running in front. I think she's holding the dat screaming, but he's behind her. And apparently, there was something in the woods, but it just didn't get picked up when Heather screamed.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Yes.
Right?
Yes, you're right.
I don't know what it was in the wood, but when she says, what the fuck is that? She's actually really looking at something, but it's just so dark they couldn't see.
So there is a Jaws element to this.
Oh my God, yes.
Where because things stopped working or didn't work the way they should, we don't get to see certain things and it makes it scarier.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yes, yes. I see where you're going. It's
like one of those things.
I wished it. I'm glad we didn't see it, I should say, because if we did, it's too early in the film for you to, like, you know, oh, it's definitely menacing. Because still at this point, you're like, what? I love how they get together, and they're in the grass, and there's this one line of dialogue that I always think of, and I'm an insomniac. I think about it way too much. Mike says, it's got to be close to morning. It's got to be like 5 o'clock, right? And there's a pause beat. And how there's like three and they all like gasp.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Yes. And it's like, oh,
yes.
And then they wake up and they're just, you know, that you could see the exertion, the fatigue and the fear now becoming a psychological battle for them.
That's right. Yeah. It's a nice mix of supernatural survival. And then just like stress with your fellow man. It's kind of a perfect storm of ratcheting up the tension for the audience.
Mm-hmm. I wonder too. I mean, like, you know how we're blending reality here, and they really do a great job of, I mean, their exertion and their fatigue. Like when, like, you know, you've experienced these two nights of pure horror, and you want to stop and take a break on the log. You know what I mean? Like you can't keep walking because you're so exhausted because you haven't eaten anything. You have water, but you can't eat. And like,
was there
you got no
a
energy.
Thing with like them losing the food? And what am I thinking?
Oh,
of?
That's Grave Encounters, I think. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. That would have been something, but I guess they didn't plan on being there that long, so they had...
Yeah, no, that's true.
What did they bring with them as food? I remember they were showing it to each other in the hotel room.
It wasn't much.
I forget,
it
but I mean,
like survival, you know.
Yeah, and
then
also,
do
too,
they
it's
ever
raining.
Give us a sense? Do they ever give us a sense of how long they're going to be out there?
I think it was just a two-day trip.
Okay.
So they were going... So they left on a... They met up Friday. Not maybe one, dude. They went Friday... Hotel room, wake up, Saturday night, film all day Sunday, go home because Mike has, or Josh
has
work, to
be
at work.
Right. Yeah, he's got work.
Exactly so it's a weekend trip. They ain't got no food, you know? They ain't got no smokes, you know? And right, also, too, like for another, like for those of you who go camping, dude, it's miserable when it rains out there.
Oh my God.
It's a different type of wet.
It really is.
It ain't no fun, dude, you know? And they're wet. They've been wearing the same clothes. And they're taking breaks because they're so tired. And I thought that was such a great, like, you know, it felt real that, you know, because I've been exerted like that where I'm like, I know I got to get back, but I got to take a break, you know, like.
Did you watch the most recent Blair Witch where it was kind of very similar to this one?
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. What was your thought? Because, like, the cameras are so much better.
Oh, yeah. Interesting question.
What was your thought of a lot of the same things kind of happening, but you see it clearly. Mm-hmm. It's not as shaky. What did that do for you as an audience member?
Well, one, I wouldn't have made that film just it's not like when you see, here's the thing too. And this is kind of funny you bring this up because, you know, like as a filmmaker and also as like a video editor, like you have this resolution thing, right? Your TV can go now up to like an 8K, right?
It's insane. Yeah.
But when I first started video editing, it was at 480p.
Yes,
right. And then it went to 720, right?
And that was huge.
Huge. And dude, I have so much stuff from my band, Downtown Harvest, that was filmed in 480 and 720p. But I distinctly remember watching it back in the day when it first debuted and be like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But then your eyes change through the course of it. And then the reasoning behind it all. Like my television turned on now, don't think nothing. But when I first got that new TV, dude, it was like looking through a window.
It's insane.
You know?
Yeah.
But you become used to it, you know? And like, hey, how are you? Hey. I think that's the interesting thing about the Blair Witch in 99 was that it was everything we just knew at that time. You know what I mean? Like, even though she brings the 16 out there, they wanted to rationalize the handheld, probably Super 8 cam as the documentary behind the documentary, you know?
Yep.
Which becomes a flashlight too towards the end there.
Yeah, that's
a really
good
shitty
point.
Flashlight.
That's
but,
a good point. I just remember watching that new Blair Witch, and all I could think about was how crystal clear the shots were. Like all I could look at was like the woods and how much I could see and the color.
Yep.
Like the beautiful color of the woods. Although there was kind of they washed it out a little bit to blue, but
they did that. Yeah.
But it was part of it not being as scary, right?
It just wasn't.
It really was just not as scary.
It's getting scary at this point in the film. It's getting so scary because, you know, Josh has already proclaimed there's shit all over it, slime. And, you know, the slime is a clear indicator, I guess, of you're next. Because the next morning, you know, and we were talking about this in the beginning. It's interesting, too, because Heather finds Josh's clothes, a bunch of sticks with Josh's clothes in it. You know what I mean? And when that happens... She doesn't want to open it right there. She's terrified. So terrified that she throws it in the woods. Doesn't want to look at it.
So how do we rationalize the little stick figures? Like, if it's the witch, it's the witch. Fine. If it's Josh, like, did he have a team of people making little stick figures? Like, how do we rationalize this?
Sticks were hung prior to them getting there. The day, night of... It's probably all prop. If it is him, that prop's already made because he's a filmmaker.
Yep.
He already has that all set up.
Yep.
But, you know,
do we notice him or Mike guiding them to those areas on a second rewatch?
Not really. No, it isn't. I looked for something like that. In fact, I mean, like one of the scenes too, I would say in Josh's favor, he is a victim. It's weird because it's just, I don't think anybody who was in on it would fall into it. He falls into the trees at one point because he's exhausted.
Yeah.
And the way he falls.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm in on it. I'm going to be going that hard. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because it looked real, right? I think he holds onto a vine and the vine don't do shit. But like, yeah, the sticks and all that. Isn't it interesting how like True Detective years later would pick up the sticks but put it down like the bayou and like still have like an evil feel to it?
Well, you got to figure they were influenced by this film, as we all were in some
totally,
way.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, the sticks were amazing just because that became the logo. It became the look of the film.
Yes, it really did.
When she comes across it too, you know, I think she comes across that with just Mike too, which is even more terrifying.
Yep.
Because they're still looking for Josh, but she, and then like, oh, yeah, remember when she's like, she keeps filming and Mike's like, let's go, you know, like,
yes,
one more.
That's such a filmmaker thing to do.
Oh, I know. That's such a thing. I guess I gotta get one more.
I have to get the shot.
There's never enough coverage. Sometimes I think I've got enough coverage. I'm like, I could have shot more.
Absolutely.
What's wrong with me? Yeah.
I tell my students, you can never get enough footage. Just keep going.
At this point during the cinema, I remember being in the theater and just being like, wow, you know what I mean? Like, I remember people having popcorn, but being scared to eat the popcorn.
Or
not going hard for it, you know?
I think from the minute we get to, like, the nighttime, the first night in the woods, mm-hmm. I think everyone is just riveted. There's no, like, fine, you're on the street in Maryland talking to the people. I think people are still calling this a movie. But as soon as you get to the woods and things start going down, you start hearing sounds, I think you're just riveted. And no one's doing anything except watching and being scared.
Yeah. Mike then like comes to the front of like the my attention and the audience attention there when, you know, Mike finds himself like confused that, you know, first off, Heather, who was supposed to be the leader, is now broken. Josh is gone.
Yep.
And, you know, Mike starts to go off the deep end with his I think they start talking about shit they want to do when they get home and like all that. But like,
yeah.
Mike is just so realistic. I believe that Mike was the only person like who didn't have acting experience. I'm not sure of that, but he just felt real. He looked real, you know what
I
mean?
He did. He really did.
And then, you know, we're geared, like, the thing that's wild is, like, the tension's mounting as a, you know, the sun starts to fall and the, you know that they ain't getting out, you know? And they know it's coming, you know? Remember that shot where they're getting ready for nighttime? And then Heather turns on with the infamous POV shot, you know?
That's right. Like, that's the heart and soul of the film, man. That is just her humanity.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly the reason why we never put her into the conspiracy theory of being in on it, right? Because she's so real and so raw with it. The little tear coming down, like the whole thing,
yep.
It's just brilliant. And then, of course, that leads us to the final set piece, which becomes a setup for all the lore. Like, I remember we're getting in that building, right? And we're going through, and then there's a moment where it's like, we're going to go down into the basement.
Yeah.
And that's when all the lawyers are like, oh, no, we should not do that.
Yeah.
Do not do that.
How about the black handprints on the wall with paint?
Like, oh, yeah. Because then, again,
what a thing.
Harking back to the kids that were mm-hmm. brought down there. Yeah, it's like everything is now coming together so well. And, again, you have not seen anything supernatural. Like, there's
still,
no witch.
Still nothing.
No, even in the final shot, you
nothing
still have not seen anything.
Even when they're walking up to the house, I mean, you hear Josh for a bit screaming, like, you know, but that's the other thing, too, is like the tongue thing. I'm like, how's he screaming, dude? Like, it can't be a tongue.
Yeah.
And then some people online say, oh, it's his teeth. I'm like, what tooth looks that way, dude? You know what I mean? Like, whose tooth comes out looking like that, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, there's just all these little threads are just coming together to get us to the finale, and it just works so well because we're so revved up as an audience. We have the lore,
yeah.
We have the things that are harking back to the things we've heard during the man on the streets, and then
yep.
We get to the set piece. We're actually out of the woods, which in theory should be a relief, but it's not.
Nope.
It's actually worse now that we're in the house. And
what's more scary than a house in the middle of the woods?
Oh, in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
and it's just, yeah.
On a hill.
Yeah. So it just shows you that if you construct the story in a way that is deep, believable, mm-hmm. consistent, then the audience will be with you.
Exactly. You know, and like they are there, you know, the wild thing too is like the map of the house, like the blocking for it. It's like, okay, we get in the house.
Yep.
We go all the way up top.
Yes.
Then I hear him downstairs.
Oh, God.
Mike and his chariot dance down the, you know? Also, too, like, whatever's going on there with that Mike, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's interesting to me, like, about, like, the way that scene plays out with her screaming, you know? How he runs so fast. That's how they got separated, right?
Yep.
So he runs down there, right? We see his POV. Josh, where are you? Josh. You know, and then he gets taken out. And we don't, like, first off, I don't think I've never seen anything like that in movie. You know, like, where your character's running, chatting, and then bang. No, and then still, not even giving me, like, the cape thing or, you know, somebody's, like, mysterious feet, you know?
Yep.
Nothing.
Yep.
Then we go back to Heather. And he's got the dad in the basement, so you hear her screams, but you see her POV. That's how it's going, I think.
So what's important here is, as an audience, we know we should not ever go down to that basement because that is where the kids were murdered, right? Mm-hmm. But if she's hearing Mike scream down there, that's probably the only thing on the planet that could get her down there.
Yeah, you're right.
And it motivates her to go to the one place she knows she shouldn't go.
Yep.
Got it.
It's the Blair Witch just ran right behind us. Shit, I mean, I was like, yeah. His voice was like, it sounded like it was right behind us, and then he wasn't.
No, well, so of course, like, we're talking about the scariest part of the film, yeah.
But yeah, as Heather makes her way down, you know, she's tears, crying, just completely out of her mind.
And, yes.
Man, like
when we got this tight point of view, POV shot. Yep. There's nowhere to go. Like, I remember being in the theater, like, oh my God.
I know. Stuck, you know, like paralyzed with fear.
Yeah, you know, the only other scene I can think of that does something similar is I Am Legend, when Will Smith goes into the building.
Yes, I love that scene.
That's like the only other time.
He's going like this with the flashlight?
Yes,
like,
yeah. He's going around the corner.
Dude,
in the stairwell.
I love that movie, man.
Yeah.
You know, at one point they were going to have Johnny Depp as the lead vampire, and they weren't going to be CGI vampires. They were going to be humans.
That would have been damn cool.
I know. I mean, like, the effects aren't so good, but the story itself
is really good.
Well,
it's probably one of Will Smith's best.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently they are making an I Am Legend 2 because
I heard, yeah.
He doesn't really die in the alternate scene, which you can check out online, which brings me back to the Blair Witch. So once the film's completed, right, and then Artists and Entertainment or whomever, I think it's Artists, they say, like, straight up, like, hey, we like this, but what's going on? You right?
I'm good.
Like, what's going on here? Like, you can't end the movie that way. And they're like, well, we like it that way. And they're like, well, look, we're going to give you some money. You're going to go back there, folks. We're down here at Bell's Mills. Treacherous. All right? Stick with us as we make our way
across the bridge.
Yes, exactly.
Well, we made
it. Good die. So they send them back. I think they just sent the filmmakers and Mike back to Maryland to get back in the house. That house actually was a real physical location for many years.
Wow.
And I think they tore it down in 2010 because people got sick and tired of all the people showing up in town.
I'm sure, you know?
But what was I saying? I get so distracted down here.
Yeah, it's hard, man.
Yeah. Because people seemingly don't know how to drive here. Like, what's this dude doing, man? Like, what, did you think about making a left turn? Good stuff right there, bud. Yes, they send the two directors and they send Mike back down there to Maryland, to the house, to film three alternate scenes. Have you seen them?
I have not.
They're all on YouTube, right? So, like, they wanted to go for that horror element, you know what I mean? Where they were all like, what happened here? They're jumping it. Car's dead battery.
I've been there.
So they send it back and they're like, look, we like your whole thing with Mike, but let's try to do something scary. So the first one they did, what was it? Mike is in a, like, there's a bunch of sticks hanging in the basement. And Mike's hanging.
Oh,
like,
you know what?
Sticks.
I read about these scenes. I have not seen them. I've read about this. Yeah,
they're out
there
now. They were on, like, the Blu-ray release or whatever back in the day.
Okay. Yep.
The next one was he was hanging.
Yes.
And then I think the third was he was, like, his guts were, like, torn out apart. And then after that, that's when the filmmakers were like, yeah, but we still like ours.
But none
and
of
that
those...
same time period, they went back, dude, and they filmed that scene that we're talking about in the beginning where they tell the guy the story about the kid.
So they filmed
that whole movie, but then they put that one MacGuffin thing in there,
yep,
which set the whole movie
on. Yes. So, all right. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing scarier than a guy hanging, right? That's just a scary as hell image. But the problem with all, I remember reading about all these alternate endings and being like, but they don't tie to the film.
Yeah.
Like there's no meaning to it. Whereas at least if he's in the corner, we hark back to the killer and what he did to the kids. And that's what's so important about it.
So they do that. And then that podcast, one of the directors is saying like, yeah, man, like we can't believe it. They actually said, yeah, we can use your ending. You know, like that never happens. You know what I mean? Like ever.
Yeah.
You know? And the other ones, they would have gone for that scare tactic. Same thing actually happened with Paranormal Activity when Steven Spielberg saw the first cut and he told him to go back and add something. Just, you know, it's like, sometimes the original filmmakers has always been the best.
They just have the vision, yeah. And honestly, if you do hanging, if you do the blood and guts, you might not get as successful a film.
No.
It probably gets too intense for our crowd, essentially, who've powered that film.
Yeah. Interesting, though, that, Artisan, they pick that up and they're like, yeah, we should just go with that. The way the film ends, too, you know, Heather's there, camera goes down, but the camera stays on for a little bit, right? And if you look at the camera frame when the camera, just before it cuts off, there's nothing in it, you know, but there's this one rock, I swear to God, it turns into a skull.
Oh, no way.
I mean, it looks like it. I can't prove it. I've never seen it, but it like almost like changes shape because what's happening is that the tape is like burning out, you know, like.
Yes.
It's at the end of its reel, but.
I'm gonna have to
yeah, that was the first
that
time that it ever like dropped like that. Hey, Dummy. But I had never seen a film end that way. It prepped me for The Sopranos years later.
Yeah, and that was, what, 15 years later?
At
least 10.
Probably, yeah.
Just and, like a cut to black.
Even when The Sopranos came out, like, people, I've never seen anything like it. It's like, yeah, you have. How you doing? But, yeah, and then what happens is the Blair Witch Project is so successful. I remember I went back to the theaters that summer when they did the wide release. It didn't do the same thing as it did when I was in that small, dark theater, you know, because it was like, the word was already out that it was a film, you know, the magic was
all
lost.
You heard about it from your friends, you all talked about it.
Yeah.
But that first viewing will just be such a terrifying experience.
Such a terrifying experience, and it, like, spawned, like, a whole new era of film.
That still exists.
Quarantine, you got
We're
Paranormal
still doing
Activity,
it.
Still
yes.
doing it, yeah, I mean... What's
in fact,
one...
some of the most classic films of the next 20 years become those...
Used elements, yes.
Those elements, yeah.
I mean, like, even, like, more notoriously, when the Justice League was refilmed, they open up the movie with a kid filming Superman, and Superman has the worst CGI skin because he had a mustache, and they couldn't get him to shave it.
Oh, my God.
Wow, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, that's right. Right. Yes.
So the Book of Shadows comes out, I think, a couple years later because they want to capitalize on the success. That's the old Hollywood I remember, you know, being like, let's get that sequel out there quick.
Yeah. And so, all right. So that film, again, does everything wrong. We see the monsters. We see the ghosts.
Yeah.
Tons of CGI. And there happened to be some of the wood figures. And I guess that's.
Yeah, and that's it. And like, I remember, what was the guy from Burn Notice? He's in it. It's a crazy character actor, but I don't remember anything except the slasher element too. And towards the end of being like, "What is sucks?"
I just remember like the woman with the red hair turning into a witch or something.
I remember I was done with it at that point, and like I was just like, "Man, they did it." But then the Blair Witch, you know, it just stayed popular for so many years.
Yeah.
They tried to remake it in 2016, do a legacy sequel, I guess.
Yep.
Because Heather is a character they're looking for. Nothing ever comes from it, and then eventually you do see a CGI witch, which. I was just done with it at that point, you know?
Yeah, there's no reason.
So apparently the filmmakers have gone back a few times to the filmmakers, but now it's at a different studio because they had several different ideas. Like I said, the prequel thing. But then they did mention that they did have a direct sequel to Heather, Mike, and Josh's story. There's talks now that it could become a TV show. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
I bring the actors back. Bring Heather, Mike, and Josh back.
All right, here's my pitch. Here's how we do it, okay? So we start off Maryland back dirt, not dirt road. We're actually on a highway. We're on the outskirts of the woods. So we see the asphalt. We see the woods. Next shot we see is a pair of old, old boots, tattered, walking out of the woods, coming back onto the asphalt. And then this figure starts to make way back to town. This person's Josh. He's been missing in the woods for 25 years.
I love that.
He has no idea. My microphone's... he has no clue, like, where he's been, you know? It's almost like a fire in the sky element to it. But
does he have a tongue?
That's a question that I was going to, like, leave. I was thinking, too, like, as a character, it would be interesting if he didn't.
Yeah.
And you couldn't convey, because you couldn't talk. You don't know sign language. You got to have somebody teach you sign. You've been alone for so long. But then the interesting thing would be, like... You know, what the 2016 film tried to do, but like they try to bring it into our world. The way to do it is like he comes back into the town. The town starts to talk. As soon as the town starts to talk, national news shows up. You got people showing up out of nowhere. Police are warning them, whatever you do, please don't go into the woods. They all go in the woods. None of them make it out.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And it would be so hard to do, but it would be wild to tell a tale where not only is the terror widespread, but still unseen.
Yeah. People you go in the woods, you're gone.
Something, I mean, like, there's so many different ways you could do it. Everyone finds out they all, you know, but then, like, the element two would be, like, where is Heather and Mike? Do you have to find them? Or maybe the story is that they all three walk out together.
That would be kind of cool.
We should write it.
That would be kind of cool. Yeah, they come out, and what are the what are the repercussions of them showing back up 25 years later?
Yeah, well, that's a horror movie itself. Because they'd be so, imagine like being a filmmaker and like you've been gone for the last 25 years, and then the first thing they show you is TikTok.
Whoa, okay, whoa, Bob.
Right?
They walk out, right?
Yeah.
And to them, it's 1996.
Oh, that's good.
And they're like, wait, what?
Oh, it's like Back to the Future. Like
they're like, we just went out to shoot a documentary.
Oh, that's good.
Here's our equipment.
Oh, that's even good.
Right?
Like, what if he shows up on Monday for work and he looks like he's 50?
Yeah, he does get to work.
Right? He shows up with the camera. Yeah, that's kind of scary,
dude. That is cool, yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
That's like a different... Hey, how are you? Like, almost like a time... See, I also think that all those characters could be... They still could be dramatic. I think that, like, I mean, Josh was in True Detective.
Yep.
He was one of the bikers.
Yep.
Heather has since changed her name. I think her name is something with a lotus in it. But
oh, interesting.
Mike still, you know, still Mike.
Mike's Mike.
But I would love to see them again, you know? Like the idea. It's always like the one survives and where's the other? It would be so interesting if they all rolled out.
They come out of the woods. They don't know anything happened. They have the footage, right?
Oh, wow.
And, like, what are the repercussions of that?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's got, like, a village vibe to it,
too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
You
could also go that way with it, with, like, who doesn't want that getting out, you know?
Yeah.
Because it would be wild if somebody knew that those woods were like that. Like, I think the filmmakers themselves said it was like being in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yep.
But, yeah, man, what a wild story. The fact that we're still talking about it 25 years later, you know?
I mean, it's hard not to think about it anytime you watch a found footage horror film. Like, you always, at the back of your mind, have a little twinge of, man, I remember seeing the Blair Witch Project.
Yep. The hairs on my neck standing up, you know?
Yeah.
Heather running through the woods.
There's still, I remember just the other night, I'm driving home on one of the roads that I would have come back from the theater from, and thinking about it.
Yeah.
Thinking about the drive home that night.
Yeah, how scared I missed those things, man. When nobody was on the phone and like they were all just like,
yeah,
man, can you believe that scene? Could you believe that? Like,
it's just headlights and woods around you.
It's awesome.
You're just waiting for something to pop out.
Yeah, but the Blair Witch, like now that Lionsgate has got it and hopefully the cause is out there, you can check out Josh's page on there. Just Google search like the Blair Witch Project, you know, in the news in the last couple days and you'll see what's going on with like somebody screaming. Oh, it's a baby. You'll see what's happening.
Yeah. This is what happens.
You'll see like what's going on with that, and like get behind the calls and support those guys because they made us like scared 25 years ago, and it's still scary, man. I don't know if you watched it recently, but go ahead, pop it in. It's good stuff.
It'd be a nice poetic justice to giving them one more moment in the sun, getting them paid.
Yeah, get him paid, dude. You know what I mean? Come on, Blair Witch, pay.
And or, us fans, us filmmakers demand it.
Yes. It's the right thing to do, you know? You didn't make money off of the cameras. You made them off the three actors. So make sure that, you know, they get what's due. I'd like to thank the mayor of Country Hocking once again for coming here on my podcast. It's always fun to not talk politics or current events and go right into the entertainment world.
Love it. Yes.
I had a great time today. I'll have to see what the next anniversary shows. We'll have to do this again. Yeah, but yeah, right? Maybe we should write that Blair Witch story. Could be good.
I would love to. And maybe a Twilight recording in the woods.
Oh, I'm down. I'm down. Yeah. I'm down, dude.
If the wives let us.
if only they would. But yeah, tune in next week. Don't know what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure I'll be here. My name's Bob. Thank you to Yaniv. See you all later. My name's Bob. It's been another episode of The Bobcast.